From WNYC in New York, this is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield.
And I'm Brooke Gladstone. Last Tuesday was no ordinary Tuesday. It was Titanic, Cyclopean.
Super Tuesday, the make-or-break day for presidential candidates.
The high-stakes battle across a dozen states.
Drenched, as always, in a tidal wave of prognostication, which, you may have noticed, has consistently rolled in the wrong direction. Where to start?
Jeb Bush is the strongest general election nominee by far. He's got the best message for a general.
He's going to raise the most money. The establishment likes him the best. A lot of members of Congress would like to see him be the nominee. And obviously, to some extent, it's his turn in the primogeniture of the party.
Oopsie.
Well, it is game over for Jeb Bush after disappointing results in South Carolina.
There's Bernie Sanders, who's an adorable socialist, but probably not a serious candidate.
Now, Senator Bernie Sanders has proven he's a serious threat to Clinton's bid for the Democratic presidential nomination.
Trump is America's summer fling.
This is a phenomenon that is going to fade sooner rather than later.
I think last night is the beginning of the end for Trump. That is my prediction.
Ah, halcyon days.
Donald Trump dominates his Super Tuesday rivals. The GOP establishment reaches for the panic button.
Because of this terrible, horrible, no good, very bad year for the talking heads, we're devoting this hour to the perilous art of political prognostication. I mean, even in the best years, media predictions rarely beat a magic eight ball.
Phil Tetlock is a professor of psychology and management at the University of Pennsylvania and is an expert on prognostication. He's conducted two landmark studies that uncover the finer points of forecasting. The first, Expert Political Judgment, How Good Is It? How Can We Know? And more recently, Super Forecasting, The Art and Science of Prediction. Phil, welcome to On the Media.
Thank you.
People like you break down prognosticators into two general categories.
You know, there's an old joke that there are two types of people, those who divide the world into two types of people and those who don't. But you're right. I talked about foxes and hedgehogs in the early work, and I think it's a critical distinction. It helps to be a little more fox-like, a little more self-critical, a little more eclectic, willing to draw ideas from lots of different places. You pay a price for committing to one point of view and trying to assimilate everything into it. And that's more or less what the hedgehogs do.
As you flip around your cable channels, do you see more foxes or do you see more hedgehogs?
The hedgehogs outnumber the foxes by a very substantial margin, and there's a pretty obvious reason for that. The hedgehogs give the media the sound bites that they want. Hedgehogs have one big idea. They try to assimilate everything into that big idea, and that makes for a compelling narrative package. Foxes are more likely to interrupt their flow of thought with things like but, however, although. So that led me to propose one very simple rule of thumb for distinguishing more fox-like from more hedgehog-like pundits. Foxes are more likely to say however, and hedgehogs are more likely to say moreover. So you have the however over moreover ratio.
Hedgehogs, you say, are historically less reliable. That's not just a qualitative judgment that you've made. You know their batting averages.
We do. We keep the track records over extended periods of time. One of the reasons why the more hedgehog-like forecasters have bad batting averages is that they're so aggressive, intellectually aggressive. They're like batters who are swinging for home runs all the time, and they strike out a lot.
Oh, it's like Ryan Howard of my Phillies. He hits about 229 with power, but there's an ongoing question of whether he's any longer useful to the team. Are these guys, these hedgehogs, useful to the team, or more to the point, are they useful to democracy?
Well, there's a big illusion that develops over time. The hedgehogs are swinging really hard. They're making confident judgments. They're often assigning pretty high probabilities to low-frequency events. If you do that often enough, sometimes you're going to be right. And you're going to be hauled out in front of the media as, here's the guy who predicted the rise of Islamic fundamentalism. Here's the guy who predicted the Russian invasion of the Ukraine or the Syrian civil war or the whatever, because they're predicting so much of the time. Like the broken clock theory, the broken clock is right twice a day. There will virtually always be some extremist hedgehogs who are going to be well positioned to claim credit for predictive successes.
Now, Phil, this hour was occasioned in part because it seems that nearly every elite political pundit and some not-so-elite ones like me got Trump completely wrong. And it seems that if we believe we knew anything about our nominal areas of expertise,
we in the punditocracy have learned our lesson. Jack Schaefer, the media critic at Politico, called Trump a black swan. Tell me, what is a black swan?
The idea comes from the fact that Europeans didn't know about the existence of black swans until they got to Australia. Black swans were sort of unthinkable. And that's a metaphor for things that are radically unpredictable. Nobody saw them coming, but after the fact, everybody has an explanation for them.
What makes this guy such a black swan that he could have so flummoxed just everybody in the prognostication arts?
Donald Trump is not a totally black swan. He's more of a dark gray swan. There were people in the summer of 2015 who thought he had some low probability chance, maybe 5%, 10%. And over time, they've gradually increased that probability as Trump has proven to be much more politically durable than virtually everybody in the know thought. Here's the bum rap that a lot of pundits get. Let's just say for sake of argument that you're a wonderful pundit and you're well calibrated, which means that when you say that something is 90% likely, that thing happens 90% of the time. You say 70%, that thing happens 70% of the time. And something you say is 90 or 95% unlikely happens. Does that mean you're automatically a terrible forecaster? No. Sometimes unlikely things happen. If you're a perfectly calibrated forecaster and you say something is 95% likely, 5% of the time, you should be wrong.
Now, Phil, as you know, our partner in this project is Nate Silver and 538.com. It does gather all of the available data and contemporaneous polls and historical data and say, under these conditions, 73% of the time, so-and-so will win. But Nate didn't see Trump coming either. Do you have any thoughts on this?
Sure. Nate Silver and his team at 538 are extraordinarily adept at analyzing poll data. There really weren't a lot of quantitative data to crunch about Donald Trump in the summer of 2015. The question in this situation isn't, you know, did you see an extremely gray swan from a long distance, which very few people are ever going to be able to do. The question is, how quickly do you change your mind as new evidence comes in? So between the summer of 2015, when Donald Trump was indeed a very dark gray swan, and now when he is not at all, what were the cues, what were the clues that led Nate and other people to change their minds? Note, by the way, that if the question in the summer of 2015 was, will Trump be the nominee or will Trump be the next president, it's not at all clear that either of those things will happen, but the likelihood of each of those things has materially increased. The question is by how much and how we go about making those determinations. And it would be interesting to hear someone like Nate talk about that.
I think there's a 95% probability that you're going to get to do that very thing. Phil, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Philip Tetlock is a professor of management and psychology at the University of Pennsylvania. He is co-leader of the Good Judgment Project, which you can find at gjopen.com.
Actually, make that 100%. Here's Nate Silver's answer.
The short answer is that there were a lot of moments, right? And you can kind of see us going from saying 2% to 5% to 10% to 20% to 50%. Now I'd say it's higher than 50%. That gradual adjustment is, at least by the textbook, consistent with what you're supposed to do, right? You're supposed to start out what we might call a prior belief. You say, candidates like Donald Trump don't usually win party nominations. And here are the reasons why. Then you adjust that view against the weight of the evidence. And when you see things that are part of your theory, that, hey, the party will organize to stop Donald Trump, and this is not happening in October, it's not happening in December, it is happening now, but maybe too late. So we did update our view over the course of the campaign.
Coming up, more from Nate and others on polls and money, and why the best answer this year may be, reply hazy, try again.
This is On the Media.